Welcome to the Migrant and Diasporic Cinema Podcasts. Here follows a recording from our conference, The Industrial Context of Migrant and Diasporic Cinema in Contemporary Europe, which was held on the 13th of January 2007 at the Institute of Germanic and Romance Studies in London. Yves Gaberio is Managing Co-Director of Soda Pictures UK. Her presentation is entitled "That's a World Music Film for Us, the Distributor's Perspective." Professor Dominic Nasta is going to introduce the session and chair it.
Yves is originally from Canada and holds a BA in Political Science and Languages from McGill University and an MA in Communication. She did postgraduate work in Chinese and Japanese film at the University of London School of Oriental and African Studies, actually around the corner, as she told me. And prior to setting up Soda Pictures, Yves worked in European business development for an online company, as well as in film festival production and programming, including Edinburgh, London, Vancouver, and San Francisco, and in film journalism for The Guardian, Time Out, and The Independent. She got started working in the cultural sphere in Japan and China, and worked in international relations and cultural affairs. So Soda Pictures was set up in 2002, and the company now has over 35 films in their catalogue, including Requiem, Into Great Silence, Keen, Heading South, Vers le Sud, Crazy, Head On, Brothers, Untold Scandal, Balzac and the Little Chinese Seamstress, and the upcoming All Joy and After the Wedding. They are starting to get involved in co-producing and have worked on an American indie called Choking Man, and they're involved in the UK Better Things, currently in production and directed by Dwayne Hopkins. Yves is going to talk about the kinds of films she produces, she distributes, how they define them in the marketplace, and how they release them in the UK, with a specific look at the trans-European film Crossing the Bridge, The Sound of Istanbul, by acclaimed director Fatih Akin.
The purpose of my talk today is to map a film from production to screen and beyond, so that is the distribution of a film. I'll focus on a couple of films in particular as case studies, Crossing the Bridge, as mentioned, and another film by the same director called Head On. I'll talk primarily from a business perspective, but because this conference is about migrant and diasporic cinema, I'll also try to address some of the socio-political implications of their existence and release in the marketplace, in the UK specifically.
So first we'll go through and just, I'll give you a brief introduction to distribution, and then look at what European cinema is, since we're talking from a perspective of within contemporary Europe, and then defining specialized film, which is a term created by the UK Film Council, and then defining migrant and diasporic cinema more specifically, and then looking at the two films as a case study. So if we start with what is distribution? Film distribution is the acquisition or purchase, either for, it's not always for money, but generally, so that's why we say acquisition over purchase of a film for specific territory and its release on one, some, or all of the following areas: cinema, which is its theatrical release, DVD, television, video on demand, airline, hotel, non-theatrical, ancillary rights. And how does it work? We either acquire a film at script level while in production, once we've seen some footage, in post-production, or a final film that we see just before or at a festival where it has its premiere. We could also watch it on a DVD screener sent to us or at a buyer screening in London. We generally work with a sales agent, which is someone who represents a film, but sometimes directly with a producer to determine the deal terms, which include the license area, generally for us is the UK and Ireland, the period of time that we have the license for, generally about 10 years, minimum guarantee, which is how much we advance on the film, much like you would do with a flat or a house, and then the back-end splits across all the rights. So how much you would then, if there are profits on the film once you've released it, you get, and how much goes back to the producer. Once acquired, we build a release plan for the film, and this includes sales and exhibition, which is getting the films into the cinema,
marketing and press, and we determine what's the genre, or we discuss what's the genre of the film, what are its key selling points, who's its target audience. We write a positioning statement with a log line, a short synopsis, long synopsis, and try to localize press notes or production notes for the UK press. And then we think about publicity angles. And we also discuss the strengths and weaknesses of the film and try to preempt what's going to happen throughout the release. And this process, not necessarily from the acquisition of the film, but once we decide and set the release date of the film, it usually takes about 3 months. And this generally is because of long lead magazines and for press reasons, and if we get marketing partners on board. But sometimes it can take up to a year from the purchase of a film or from when we first see it in a festival to its release. And the last part of this part introduction to distribution is, how is success measured? A film is labeled immediately. So what genre is it? Who's in it? Where's it from? What language is it in? And all this is to determine who the market is for the film and who's going to play it. So this is key to distribution, is where are we going to show the film and who is going to come and see it. And not only do we have to have a very clear sense of this, but convince the cinemas that they too want to play this film, that people will come and see it. So looking at genres, you know, genres are the greater way of positioning a film: adventure, comedy, crime, drama, epic, horror, musical, sci-fi, western are some examples. There's also, I would say, an area when you're classifying films called non-genre, which would be more like animation, family, classic, cult, documentary, silent, things like that. And subgenres are, say, within drama, there might be a biopic, or, you know, when you're dealing with exhibitors, they really, who are the cinemas, they really want to know, what is this film? So you have to be very specific. You could say it's a guy film, a chick flick, a film noir, fantasy, romance, road movie. And these all seem maybe like very Hollywood terms, but any film, you have to be able to discuss it in very quick, easy, manageable terms. So if we're thinking about genre or non-genre or subgenre, I wonder where something like European or migrant cinema would fit into this schematic. And I would position it probably as non-genre, because it doesn't have one story to tell, nor does it have a common language or culture, but it shares a geography and maybe a kind of otherness, which is, it's not American and probably not in English. So it's immediately kind of grouped into that category. I hope that's... gives you a sense of what distribution is. And then the next part, because we're talking about the kinds of films that once we have a film that we're trying to distribute in the UK, you know, we have to have a sense of where it fits within the realm of European cinema. And historically, European cinema is defined as a film from a European country and somehow more intellectual and liberal than American cinema. And it stems from such movements as German Expressionism, Italian Neorealism, the French Nouvelle Vague, and more recently, New German Cinema, Dogma from Denmark, New Austrian Cinema, contemporary Spanish film. So I think today the definition of a film's nationality is much more linked to where the money comes from than what the story is, or where the film is set, or what language it's in. If you take yesterday's BAFTA nominations, for example, the leading films in terms of nominations were Casino Royale, which is considered a UK, German, Czech, American co-production, billed as being an English, German, and Serbo-Croatian, starring a Brit, a Dane, and a French Swede. So that makes it European. Pan's Labyrinth is Mexican and Spanish co-production, so it's European. And The Queen is also billed as not only British, but French and Italian, because that's where the money comes from. So even though The Queen is quintessentially British, it is technically an Italian and French film as well. Out a few weeks ago is Perfume, based on a German novel, set in France, directed by a German director, Tom Tykwer, written by a Brit and a German, in English, and considered German, French, and Spanish. But Volver, on the other hand, the Almodovar film, is Spanish, set in Spain, in Spanish, by a Spanish director, starring Spanish actors. So I'd say that this is a Spanish film rather than a European one like the other ones, because it's completely national rather than transnational. So bigger budget films are not necessarily linked to their nationality, as I've said, but none of the films that I've talked about would fit into the definition of what we're talking about today, which is migrant or diasporic cinema. Because these bigger films, like the BAFTA nominees or these technically European films, are measured by their box office results, and where they're from is irrelevant. They're much more of an international, part of the internationalization of cinema and the business side of it. Less mainstream films, which you could call art house or world cinema, indies, or what we'll get to next, which is the UK Film Council's specialized film. I think this is where we can start getting into a discussion on migrant cinemas or diasporic or European cinemas in the marketplace. So if we look at, I've put the whole definition from their website, but I highlighted probably the most important part, which is specialized films offer audiences a different experience of cinema, and they relate to those films that do not sit easily within a mainstream or highly commercial genre. And the Film Council, to try to help promote these films and create audiences for them, they have set up something called the P&A Fund, and P&A means prints and advertising, which is the money that a distributor spends to release a film. And they will, if you apply and they think a film has that potential to cross over into a wider audience with greater spend on the advertising on the film and a greater number of prints in the marketplace, then they will give you some money. And their purpose is to widen access in terms of the range of films available, widen opportunities to view these films across the UK, and widen audience awareness of the range of films potentially available, which is great. But because the definition is so wide, unfortunately, films like Sideways can qualify as a specialized film because it is technically an independent film, even though it's being distributed by a major studio and has quite a lot of money already behind it. So it almost sometimes can widen the gap between a smaller film having a very low P&A spend, so it doesn't make a huge impact, as opposed to Casino Royale, for example, which is £100 million on marketing. It widens the gap the more these bigger films are supported. But this initiative by the Film Council has been very, very helpful, and they'll give anywhere from £5,000 to, which is an automatic fund to help with prints and digital release of a film, to, I think, their highest award's been about £250,000. So it can be very good. And then I just put this slide in. It's a little bit blurry, sorry, but this is last week's box office, so you can just get a sense of what's happening in the UK in terms of what people are going to see. And a lot of these, and the distributor is interesting there. I mean, Fox is a studio. Momentum is a mini-major. Icon is a mini-major, owned by Mel Gibson, Lionsgate as well. I mean, these are all probably the only independent on there. Pathé is quite a big independent. Optimum, was an independent, has now been bought by a French studio, Canal. The works, you get a sense. But then you go all the way down to Swipe and Miracle, for example, are very small independent distribution companies. But their numbers are very, very small, as you can see. And that's the gross. So a distributor, just so you know, gets one third of that. Just to give you a sense of the market and the competition. Just as a distributor, these are numbers that we look at every day. We have to know what's coming out, who's releasing what, how are films doing, what is their screen average, how many screens are they on, how long have they been out. These are stats that we look at every day. And there's no Soda film on there, sadly. But we did have a film that came out 2 weeks before that was on there, which was Into Great Silence. It's a near three-hour near-silent documentary about a Carthusian monastery in Switzerland. It was a huge success in Germany and in Italy, Switzerland. So, and here it's been a small success for us. So now I thought we should move specifically into the topic, which is distribution, as I've discussed, can be divided into many types. But mostly I've just differentiated today between studio and independent or mainstream and specialized. And within specialized, which is where I want to talk about migrant and diasporic films, I think they're films that are about cultures within cultures as opposed to the financial definition of where a film comes from. And I would argue that these films, these more independent films, the migrant and diasporic cinemas in Europe are defined by content, identity, maybe loss, displacement, films where place and roots and thus cultural politics play an important role in the film, whatever the subject. They're not strictly local stories, but transnational. That is, the source of the film's identity isn't the nation state, but rather the characters, the story, and probably where they're set. And in order to break out of their niche audience in non-national countries, for example, a German film to break out of its of a niche audience in the UK, say, a German audience, they have to have something universal, something that connects with audience, while at the same time showing something new and mapping them to other part, the audience to other parts of the world and giving them a sense of different places and cultures within a global space. This leads me to the first film I just wanted to talk about briefly, which is Head On. The producer, I don't know, what, there he is, of Head On. You know, Head On, you can talk about the German experience with it. I mean, this is a phenomenal success, and you wonder why, you know, well, in Germany, obviously, it's a huge success because it is a German, it's a German-Turkish film that resonates with a local audience perfectly, but then you bring it to the UK. Is it just for a German audience in the UK? Is it just for a Turkish audience? Probably not. I mean, the reality of distribution is that we saw it at the Berlinale. We acquired it a few months later. We released it exactly 1 year later in February 2005. So it had already been out in Germany for almost a year. It had been out in Turkey. It was already on DVD. So that audience that you may think is its primary audience has already seen it and already has it. So now we have to go into a different set of audiences who will like the film. This is the people who are interested in world cinema, you know, and how do you get to them? You get to them through the cinemas where you open or through the press, and try to create a word of mouth, which is very difficult as well, because if we go back to that slide with the box office, if you don't make that top box office in your first week, you're gone. You don't have time to create word of mouth. And then people can't find it, and then they don't have time, and they're doing something else. So a lot of, you know, the number of times you hear as a distributor, oh, I wanted to see that, and they didn't go see it. You know, it's very frustrating. But luckily, which I'll get to at the end, is there is DVD, and there are other ways that people can watch films, and this is, you know, the whole brave new world of distribution is that there will be other platforms, and I think video on demand will work in some way. I'm not sure if it will be on little handheld devices or if it'll be on your television or in smaller cinemas that where you can choose what you want to watch. And you know, all digital projection of film is just changing everything for us. So in a way, it's compromising the huge screen experience, but it's creating new ways of watching films, and you have to, I think about audiences and their time, and if they do want to see the films, trying to figure out different ways of watching them. And Head On is a film by second-generation German-Turkish filmmaker called Fatih Şekin, and he in this film, and all his films really, examines displaced cultures and generational gaps rather than national identity, I think. He looks at cultural and linguistic implications on daily life and within their communities in a national context, stemming from his own family experience, but expanding them into to comment on national, ethnic, gender, linguistic, and most important, these kind of social and political issues. I mean, his films are, I don't know if anyone's seen Head On, but it's a really, you know, strong, heavy film, but it's also, you know, fantastically shot. It's very contemporary.
Having seen it, can I just say that you make it sound terribly worthy, and actually the appeal of it is it doesn't fit a sort of worthy template of being about these issues.
Well, yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying, is it comes from his own experience, and then he tries to create something that everyone can say, wow, you know, that they're experiencing something new from it, because it's, yeah, if you've seen it, it's not worthy at all. I mean, it's
punk goth soundtrack.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to get to, is the different artworks. So this was the German poster. This is the French poster, which is also a bit blurry. So, now, if you know what The Wedding is, yeah, they've met in a... they both attempted suicide and met in a rehab center, and they're getting married just because she wants to please her parents, and they really don't like each other. I mean, eventually they fall in love, but it's a tragic love story. So then we went a totally different way in the UK, which was this one. much as it starts. The film starts with a car crash into a wall. He crashes his car into a wall. So that's what the kind of glass breaking is, and then there's a heart, and there is this
dripping with sex.
Yeah, and we had seen The French Campaign, and then we came up with one like that because wedding films traditionally do very, very, very well. So you can understand why they would do that. And then we came up with several different designs, including a nice, safe wedding shot. And then we came up with this one, and Fatish, you know, he just said, this is it. This is what I want. He loves this one, and there's the headlights behind it, and it's really all about collision and on speed and, you know, sexy, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is really what you want to get across from this film. But
can I ask something? I mean, surely a misleading poster like that has to backfire.
The wedding one. Yeah, although it did very, very well in France. So, I mean, maybe there's a well, semi-well. Yes,
say
please,
something
please.
About that. We have this French poster 3 to 2 meters in our office. Because in a way we like it, but we hate the idea of the title. In France, nobody understands something like head-on. They can't even pronounce it. They say, Edon. Est-ce qu'on va boire Edon ce soir? Nobody knows what it is about. So I was talking about this 1,000 times with other French. The only ones who didn't understand that were MK2.
Right, you were the distributors.
And I think this was the era. In Italy, the film did 350,000 admissions with the title La Sposa Turca, the Turkish bride. So it was on the wedding. It was a wedding film. This was not...
And the German translation
title,
is Against the Wall.
The French had no idea about. That was
the literal translation, as I understand this, Against the Wall, which but Head On is very clever in English because it has two or three or four meanings, you know, this collision and the...
This is a very big problem with the French. People don't pick up DVDs because of their cover. Or if we're talking a situation when the DVD has ended up...
I think they do. They do. The artwork is everything, I think.
Absolutely no. I absolutely disagree with this.
Okay.
No, I mean it's a very valid
in a bin where people kind of like in Austria wonder what to buy for £3 for tonight. Then the artwork may matter, but everybody who has seen the film Head On is you're talking as if people don't know which is this film. There is not a single person in this auditorium, I'm sure, who has not seen.
There is.
Everybody must have seen it. I mean, I cannot believe if somebody.
Well, I wish everyone in this room had bought a ticket and seen it, because if you look at if we look at our, that's pounds, but so it's about 250,000 euros or $200,000. I mean, it's not a lot. It's a very small number.
Okay, could we go back to the paper and then
it's okay. You know, this is
distribution.
I think so. Yeah, absolutely.
It's been literally everywhere. It was not a big success. It was 100,000 admissions, better than in England. Of course, I loved your poster too. Really.
Well, it was nice when the director says, and the producers, we had Klaus also, the other production company with the film, was very pleased with it. But the reason I just go back to this one quickly, and you know, it's. To follow on your point, if you look at the release dates, and this is why I was saying ours was a year later, the American one was, you know, almost a year later as well. And this really, you know, people see it, but they don't really, you know, the box office is very low and the time to market is long, so not everyone has seen it. So I put the American one there because that was their theatrical poster for cinema. Then we came out with this one, and I don't mean to give us credit for it, but I do think that we had an impact on the American DVD, which is, you know, going back to the DVD artwork, because they changed it to that for the DVD.
That's nice.
Which I didn't realize they had changed it, but you can see what they were doing with the original one that created a love story, a wedding where you think something's wrong, and then... You know, they have Istanbul in the back to really create this kind of exotic, you know, East meets West feel to it, which we stayed away from because we didn't want it to be, you know, this kind of European film. So that's why I put those there, just to show you, you know, how artwork can define a film. But people do need to see it, and how do they see it? Through advertising. And if you have a limited advertising budget, then it's only people who are reading The Guardian, reading Time Out, reading... you know, getting their Curzon Soho brochure or their local independent cinema.
Sorry, and in Turkey, media made use of Kekil is being an ex-porn star.
Yeah.
This is another thing. to promote the film.
Yes.
Turkish media
used... Oh, we used a little bit, yeah. But as I said, you know, we really didn't find that the Turkish audience was our primary. We put it in a few cinemas in kind of Wood Green and around...
How many screens did you open on in London?
I think 8.
So because you opened at the Rio, but I don't in Dalston, which is yeah. kind of your Turkish example, would be Turkish.
Rio was okay, but we had it in the Turkish Film Festival beforehand.
But the audience wasn't, as far as I could tell, particularly Turkish.
Turkish, no.
Which I think would be fairly typical with people trying to do that at the Rio. I think other distributors have tried it with the same lack of effect.
Yeah, I mean, the idea was that...
The community goes to the cinema, but I'm not sure what
or that
do.
Maybe the Rio, that the audiences there have an interest in... or know about Turkish culture, so they might go see it. But really, it wasn't. We never positioned it as a German film or a Turkish film or anything to define it like that. It was much more about these two people. It was really about the story itself, not for the Turkish people. It didn't do well in the Turkish cinemas. As I said earlier, they probably already had all seen it and had pirated DVDs of it, so that they were then selling on the street, which we, of course, never see any of it. And then I thought Crossing the Bridge, which is the same director's next film, and it's a documentary about Istanbul. And in if you've seen it, it does talk about how Istanbul is really this city in the middle of the crossroads between Europe and Asia, and not in this kind of cliched way of East meets West, but really like this kind of genuine space of a dual identity. And I think he uses the music to really tell the story both symbolically and kind of in a visceral way. Since we looked at some of the different poster concepts, we developed probably 10 different ideas on posters for the UK. The one that was used in Cannes, where the film premiered and where we first saw it, and that was used, I think, in Germany and internationally, it's the one that's on the cover of this conference's notes. So the woman, that's her, the belly dancer with the guitar and the bridge. So we did a kind of variation. Our designers came up with more than this, but I thought these were the four most interesting ones that we first developed. So you can see they just say simulated quote and things. They're just the very first concept. So there's one that's quite, I think, conservative and safe. You know, it shows all the different bands. It appeals to everyone. There's men, women, older, younger. It's got the bridge. It looks like a little bit of a travel log. You know, people who go to Istanbul, they might like to have that on their shelf. Then this one was doing a little bit more of a mosaic, doing... a bit more texture and trying to give a different sense of the film than this one, going much more with the original artwork. And then this one our designers came up with, which was radically different, completely different audience. I mean, if you did the first one or the second, these two, I think you were really appealing to a kind of older world cinema audience, and this one's much more into urban culture, film, music, crossovers between these media. So I wonder which one you think we went with. I mean, if you see this, then you know. but we went with four, which you never know in the end what the impact is and if people are going to go see it anyway. And again, Fatish loved this one, the director. He really, he was cornering our designers. We went for this one, yeah. And then the final... I'll show you the final poster and then we'll look at the DVD, was this in the end. So you see there, it's got quotes. So we used his name because by then Hedon was quite known in the UK. This quote does for Istanbul what Buena Vista Social Club did for Havana, which is not a critical quote, but at least people know that film and could think, oh, it's about a city, and Buena Vista Social Club did very well. so think about these things. It got a 12A, which is the rating. I didn't talk about that on Head On. I think in Germany it had a 12, and here it had an 18. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's a very different positioning of the film and who's going to go see it. Then another very important part of distribution is all the logos at the bottom, you can see. Some films are quite complicated in the logos, and some are simpler. This one is quite a long one.
Okay.
Just the last thing I was going to say is that in comparison, so this is the DVD, so we did a kind of mixture. We did that on the cover, but we also put a long strip of all the bands so that people could get a sense that it was a mixture of kinds of music. And we also did a CD soundtrack with it because it wasn't available as a soundtrack in the UK. And then we did, I'm showing this just because it's part of distribution to make these decisions. Is it a double disc? Is it with soundtrack or with extras or whatever extra footage, and then we did a booklet on all the bands, because we felt like this film was much more about the whole idea of it and the music and the people and the story rather than just a film on DVD. So then that's sold for, you know, also with these kinds of films, they're quite expensive, and we try to keep them at a high level because the audience for them, in theory, is willing to pay, but you know, if you start dropping the price, you may get more people to buy them, but I'm not sure that it's true. You know, these films do have to find their audiences, and if people want them.
Have you had people say they want the CD but not the DVD? Because like, we tried to buy the CD and found that we couldn't, and I didn't realise there was this issue with the DVD as well.
Yes, because we aren't a music label, so it didn't have UK distribution for the soundtrack, so we decided that we would do a double disc. We will do a single disc of the film, but we won't do a single disc of the soundtrack if the production company wants to, but you know, it's a whole other world.
Do you set the retail price?
We do.
Do you control it over what?
There are standards. Generally, a single disc DVD will go for $19.99, and I think this was £28. So it's quite a lot. I mean, eventually it comes down. It does come down. But the idea is they are high quality. They do have extras. Yeah, but it is high. I mean, they go down into the 3 for £20, you know, £10 eventually. But when they're new.
Is the subtitling part of your budget?
Generally, no. I mean, it depends where they're from, but a film like this, which is German and a big sales agent, it said at the beginning of the trailer, Bavaria, they're provided. But we, for example, to put the subtitles on the DVD, we get a file. I mean, this is more technical, but we get a file with the subtitles and a file with the film, and then we have a production house that puts them together, because you could have different languages on one disc. But generally we only have the original language and English rights. We don't have the right to put it with French subtitles or with German. I wouldn't put German subtitles.
Okay, course, before I open up the floor to questions, that the floor has been opened for 15 minutes, may I ask you a question, Ina? So actually it was very interesting seeing the posters and your argumentation and the overall context, because it seems to me that, semiotically speaking, so the sign, the symbol, what the film means, what the audience means, it's quite close to Hollywood system. I mean, sex, drugs, and rock and roll is like wanting to have an audience that is quite similar to what happens in Hollywood, and he looks happy when you do this kind of thing. So how do you position yourself between the European art house system and the Hollywood merchandising, so the audience conditioning?
I think in a way you have to adapt the Hollywood model to work, because there is no, you know, European art house market anymore technically. They just, if you don't make an impact, no one will go see the film.
I think this is an important issue to be able to recognize this as such. Because
yeah, and you know, sometimes we see films that we would love to acquire for the UK, but we think we will never be able to release this film. We have films that are very hard. Requiem, for example, which is another German film we just released, it was a huge, I don't know what its numbers were in Germany, but huge success and very small release here, be critically acclaimed, but just nobody really being able to say what is it, where is it, who is it for, you know. But then at the end of the year, when you look at all the critics' top 10 films, it came out again and again, it was in these top 10 lists, and you think, but where's the audience, why aren't people going to these? So.
Okay, so Dina wanted to ask a question.
Just, I reserve the right of intervention for there were three quick questions, absolutely matter of fact. In how many prints did you release Crossing the Bridge? What did it gross? And why does it take a year after the premiere of the film to release it in the UK?
We released it on, I think it was, I'd have to look at my numbers, 5 prints, I think it was. And those 5 prints will open in London, maybe regionally a little bit. I think it opened in Edinburgh as well. And then those 5 prints will travel around the UK and hopefully go to 100 to 150 cinemas over 3 to 6 month period, with digital We didn't do digital. Yes, we did do digital on Crossing the Bridge, which meant that there are a number of cinemas in the UK that have digital projectors that are a Film Council initiative, that they can take a film as a file and play it. So you don't need a physical print, because this limits how many places can be showing the film at once. But one of the problems is there are only a few digital projectors, and they tend to be on screen one, which is the biggest screen, which they're not going to play Crossing the Bridge on. So sometimes we would have a digital booking and then have to back it up with a print, a physical 35mm print, and then it kind of defeats the purpose of trying to have more screens available. So it was five, but I would say it's been to at least 100 screens. It's not grossed terribly much. I think it's about £35,000, which is not a lot, but it had created awareness, and then everyone knows, even in Hollywood, that you don't really make money theatrically anymore. We used to, and we even set up the business as a theatrical distribution company without a DVD arm, and then you realize that that's just really for the DVD. And then the third part is, why did it take so long? A couple of reasons. One, it takes a while to negotiate the contract. Money is always an issue, and Soda Pictures is run by me and a business partner, and we have five staff, so there are seven of us. It's a small company. Cash flow is an issue. Also, screen space is the most important issue. When can you get a date? And from our point of view, if a cinema says, we originally had it in November instead of it came out in, I think it was mid-February, but then it was Oscar season and they moved it, and then for us, you have in your mind it's November, and then the cinema says, actually, key cinema to open it in says, actually, we only have space now in January or February, and so for say, okay, then better to have the screen space than to just have it come and go very quickly or not be in the right place in the market. So that's why it takes so long. By the time we see it, negotiate the deal, get all the materials, get the release together, find the place to screen it, to open it, and then release
it. Can I follow up on Google? This is really very interesting. I hope it's interesting.
Yes, I don't know if somebody else has
other
questions.
Just follow up and you decide if it merits an answer or not. Essentially, what you're saying, you said two very interesting things for me. One is that actually your theatrical distribution is kind of like an introduction for what is your real area of release, the DVD, which I completely agree with.
Which saddens me, really, but it is a reality.
I did now just the latest issue of Screen International recognize it in their in their introductory article that the ancillary markets have now actually become already the main markets, and actually the theatrical is now an ancillary to the DVD distribution and so on. So,
which is why the windows are so short.
This is one very important thing, which is but the other important thing which you're saying is actually that you're not yet ready to break away from the model of windows of distribution, namely first distributing theatrically, feeling bound to distribute theatrically, and only after a certain time following up with the DVD release, which hurts your profits, in my opinion. Because the time that you're taking to release it theatrically and then the time you're taking to release it into your main market is already saturated, because this DVD, for example, I get it from Turkey for a year at least. Everybody who's interested, we have already got it. I'm not going to buy it simply because I have it. And very many, especially the Turkish community, already absolutely saturated.
Right, but the idea is that there are other audiences out there for it who may not know, and they'll read about it through the reviews.
Yes,
and hopefully. You will not get national coverage of a film without releasing it theatrically.
Even those people, I'm assuming that the world music community in Britain would be slightly ahead of the game. And I remember seeing Crossing the Bridge at the LFF and then waiting.
Well, again, because the LFF, we had the screening in November, and then we wanted to release it straight after that. But Oscar season took all the screen space, and no one would play it. So it's it's not.
So
sometimes it's not our choice.
Is it up to you to simply go straight? Like, why Steven Soderbergh can release in every possible format at the same time?
Because he produces those films and owns them.
And can you simply say we'll distribute it on DVD and then still have five prints for those?
Cinemas won't show it. They won't show it if you did the.
If it's already been on DVD.
Yeah, they won't, and they insist on a 3-month. Window. That's the minimum. Even 2 years ago, it was a 6-month window, which is the time from theatrical release to the DVD release. Now it's 3 months, and sometimes shorter. And sometimes, people will release the next week on DVD. But you have to be so open about that. Otherwise, an exhibitor, a cinema company, will be really angry and not show your next film. Because that's their business. But yeah, you're very right that now it should be available on DVD at the same time as theatrically, as VOD, as everything. I mean, I went to see a kid's film with my little boy, and right after it, I think it was Ice Age, he said, can we go get the DVD now? And I thought, you know, this is his idea, was great, I've seen it, now I want it. And I do think that probably in the future this will be in video on demand, and especially with, you know, the whole concept that we're talking about today is this kind of melting pot of, you know, of access to information, you know, because it's available in Germany, you can't stop someone in the UK from accessing it. But these are proactive people, so you also need to realize there's an audience out there who's not seeking, they're waiting to be told, this is a good film, go see it, this is where you can go see it, and you can't eliminate that. And there is a business structure, and it's changing, sure, but, you know, you don't want to erase theatrical from the equation. Okay, and also, when we acquire a film, we have a legal right or legal obligation to release it in screens.
Okay, Daniela, please.
I have one question. I mean, not so much with Turkish German cinema, but, for example, in our kind of DVD collection of our migrant cinema, we have a number of wonderful French films which are simply not available with British subtitles, despite the fact that some of these films were shown in England. How can that happen, that they never come out?
They either didn't buy the DVD rights, that company maybe went out of business that released it theatrically, they maybe only bought video, which, you know, if it's history, I don't know how far you're tracing back, but now you would have all the rights, but maybe, or they decided not to release it on DVD for some reason.
Even DVDs have no
sometimes.
Subtitles.
Sometimes.
So Hollywood DVD will have multiple, you know, 50 languages.
But they shouldn't. Only studios really can do that because they buy worldwide rights for a film. So then they can do all the languages on one because they have the rights across territories. But if I were to put French subtitles on a head-on DVD in the UK, I mean, MK2 would come after me, the French distributor, and say, you can't do that. That's my market.